Welcome to ModCast, the Civilization podcast focused on game modding.
Guild of Duke.
Hamble. With guest co-hosts.
Pluvia.
Putmaw.
This is ModCast, episode 47, the first ModCast in a long while. I am Kevin C. Bryan, also known as Guild of Duke, and I'm joined by co-host Mark Ford.
Known as Hamble. Hello.
And we have guests today, Pluvia, also known as Tyler, and Putmaw. Now, as people who are listening to the show know, there's been a good amount of time since our last episode. The show went on a hiatus before the SDK was released. Once it was released, the regular co-hosts could not continue, and so the shows had to be restarted. We're going to try for 6 episodes by the end of this year, and again, this is episode 47. I think the biggest news, there's a lot of big news, but I guess the big news to start with is that the SDK has been released, which I think has changed a lot of things with modding. I think, all of us have done, I think, most of our work with the SDK. Is that correct?
Yeah, I work with the SDK.
Yeah,
all the time.
I guess starting out, for me, Kale's Modder's Guide was probably the way to go.
Yeah, it's outdated, but it's a good start.
Right.
That's where I started, anyway.
Have you used the FireTuner runtime Lua console that much?
No, not that much, no.
Should. One thing that's great with it that I like doing for like testing leaders and sieves is you can set it up so AI will basically run all the different roles. So you basically have the game run for 100 turns without any player input. I find it good for balance testing and also just to see what the AI will do when it's set up certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are some tools out there that actually I find very useful, too, for testing my mods if I want to test in advanced errors. For example, really advanced setup allows you to modify quite a bit of things in the setup process. So you can start an advanced error with a bunch of units if you want to in order to do some testing on a particular mod. There's also in-game editor, that allows you to change a lot of things. So the Fire Tuner is very powerful, very useful, especially when you combine it with like live tuner panels and stuff. There's some that have been created by W. Howard that are really quite handy. In fact, I was just checking to see if there's a... No, he doesn't have a leaders one. Well,
that'd be neat to swap out leaders mid-game or something. I'm sure there's a way to do that.
Yeah.
But I use this panel. They work very well. Mark, you want to start with a shameless self-promotion?
All right, sure. I've been modding for about 5 months or so. Well, no, not quite 5 months. And I've been programming since I was about 11, so a very long time. I got into it mostly because I couldn't get Thel's mod to run anymore, and I wanted to fix it so it would run because I really liked playing with it. And so I started there and just kind of branched out from there. Ended up writing my own mods. I've done the ones that I care about the most are Wonder Race, and another mod is, it used to be called Follow and Cover, it's now called Escort. Kevin?
I guess I've been making mods off and on in different games. I've never really published them. The first mod I actually published was a while back. There was that whole Civilization II Eternal War craze where a guy basically played Civilization II for about 10 years until the world was pretty crappy. And everyone kept on saying, when reading that story, like, wow, someone should make a Civ 5 mod of that. And I finally was like, all right, I'll make one. So I made one, and a lot of people like it, but I just see the flaws in it. But, it's something I want to get back to. I guess more recently, I've been working on a Pacific War mod to try to, I guess, focus more on the air and sea gameplay in Civilization, which I think usually gets neglected with the speed of attack. Pluvia?
I made the Mass Effect collection, which I think is the top-rated collection in the workshop right now.
Yep.
Oh, I've been modding for, I'm actually quite recent into it. It's only been since Mass Effect started back in February, and it's just like exploded. It's crazy how big it's gotten. I did some other stuff when I was younger on a different game that was just like changing some sound files and stuff like that in games, but the first actual modding I did was Mass Effect.
I am the creator of Civ 4 Diplomacy for Civilization 5. I started out programming when I was pretty young. I didn't do like really, really hard programming. I was like scripting for Call of Duty stuff, but I recently got into it maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. I started modding. When Civilization 4 was still out and we were waiting for Civilization 5, I was developing like an XML mod just to get my feet wet with how that worked. And Civilization 5 came out, I think a week or two later, the SDK came out, and I started making an XML mod just to test out how it would work in. Published some mod. It was horrible, though, I'll be honest. But after that, I took a break. I made Ancient World back in vanilla. It was decently popular. Mm. And then I made Sengoku Jidai after like another few months. I think when Gods and Kings came out, I just started modding again. I made that scenario. And then I took a long break because I kind of got bored. I got bogged down with work. Now I'm back. Started back in April, late April. Civ 4 Diplomacy. That, I think, is the first time I actually delved into the source code of a Civilization game and actually really worked on AI, trying to make new systems for players to experience.
So you're all like veterans then compared to me.
What?
You've all been doing it for like years now.
Well, not modding. I've been programming for many years, but I've only been modding for a few months.
Yeah, I've just been sort of like flipping between games. Like I was working pretty hard on Oblivion mod, then Skyrim came out, and I was like, oh, damn it, now I've got to relearn everything.
I'm probably the newest modder here. I know almost nothing about XML. I'm fairly familiar with the DLL, and I mostly do Lua work.
I'm the opposite. The DLL is pretty foreign, and I'm still learning the Lua, but I've mainly been doing just the XML.
Funny thing for me is DLL, I love it. It's so easy for me to actually manipulate it, because I just think C++ comes more natural to me than LUA. I can't do LUA. It's really bad, but I don't know. I guess each one of us has different strengths in different sections of modding.
It's a little weird to get used to, but you can do some neat things with Lua.
Well, you can do things faster. I mean, that's the nice thing about any 4GL language. You know, the C++ is very powerful, but, you know, it's also error-prone, and the errors can be very difficult to find. And, you know, it requires that just a higher level of skill, in my opinion, to mod it without crashing the system, basically, or creating CTDs.
I've had a lot of those when testing Civ 4 Diplomacy. I've had a lot of crashes. I just solved one, like, today. I was like, I clicked clear war on a Civ, and then everything just crashed. I'm like, wait, what just happened? It's hard, but you gotta be careful. At least with Civilization. Like, we don't have access, I guess, to the UI DLLs. They don't give us that. But without that, we can still do almost anything we want to do. I just think the problem we have is manipulating graphics. And I'm not a graphics person. That doesn't really affect me that much.
Yeah, we not only can't do, but we don't understand how they're done, the order in which they're done, or that kind of thing. And so, you know, we're kind of left stuck in a number of areas. And the documentation is weak.
Well, one thing, like, as far as graphics, one thing that I'm a little stuck looking at Hell's Modder's Guide, there's the methods he suggests for, you know, like, making custom units with the base graphics and then arrange them in new arrangements for, I forget what it's called in the files, new formations, I think it was. I've never gotten that to work. It looked like you got a little bit of that to work, your Japanese scenario, but not.
For Sengoku Jidai, I remember just importing custom units that I downloaded from, I think, Danro, was it? I'm not sure exactly who made them, but I don't exactly remember editing formations. I know I think I used like a template from Getemon's World War II scenario. I took some of his SQL, and then I used that to make my own formations, but I kind of just used base game formations for my units. I didn't really make my own.
So you used custom graphics within the base formation?
Yes.
So I remember the XML, I think is no longer working for the formation, so you have to go to SQL to adjust them?
I don't know. I haven't touched Unigraphics in so long, because now I'm focusing on the DLL. I don't even touch much databasing at all.
Yeah, me neither. Like, going into it, I knew that I wouldn't be able to create the graphics of all the races, so I was like, that's something we're just going to have to skip for the time being. If I could, I would be working with them.
Yeah, you know, I when you look at something like World of Warcraft, probably the biggest advantage, I think, is that they have the documentation. And when we have the source code, if someone wants to know what a function does in Lua or how XML works, we can actually trace it down in the source code and figure out where. But we've got a lot of Lua functions and a lot of capabilities within the XML that are buried in the UI DLL, which hasn't been released yet, so, or may never be released. We don't know.
I do hope that things will get a little better with Brave New World. At least I'm looking forward to at least the new XML function that they're going to have to add in for all the abilities. I assume that the rest of you have been following Brave New World?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you have any, like, modding plans for it at all?
Yes. I'm going to port over Civilization for Diplomacy to Brave New World. I'm going to have to change the way some mechanics work to fit in with the new mechanics, but...
Yeah, I actually have a project that I backburnered called Wonderland, which is a large scenario. Was intended to focus heavily on pushing both the AI and the player towards tall civilizations, making war a little more difficult, making building a little easier, really focusing on attrition, a whole bunch of new wonders, new buildings, a wonder victory condition, which we haven't had in a long time. That's partly written, so I'll pick that back up.
I've just been thinking about the way to, like, port my civs and, like, what will add and what will change and stuff with, like, all the new features that I'm seeing. So I've seen, like, quite a few things that I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to change that and add this brand new world functioning.
Well, yeah, I expect trade routes to add a new interesting dynamic to XML modding. Yeah. Depends on what kind of functionality they allow us to have with XML. I think some features of XML that they give us are more creative than others.
I was looking at the civilizations this morning, and Brazil has a unique ability, a unique unit, a unique building, and a unique tile improvement, which was not possible without some kind of modding in the past. So they must have done some extension to the XML for that. Curious as to how much.
I'm able to do like a sieve with four unique units in the XML alone, although it only displays two during the loading screen. Luby, I think a few viewers had broken the two limit as well. I know the Krogan did.
Yeah, they've got four, I think.
But they don't display properly. There's issues with them. I mean, this is built into the system, hopefully, and should work smoothly, we would hope.
No, it can actually be changed. I've not actually gotten around to changing it yet. I've been meaning to. But I know that, you know, the Greek ones, the Greek civilizations and the Iranian civilization. I can't remember who made it. I think it might be
Amrox?
Yeah.
Is it Amrox?
I think so. I know that he must have something in his mods that lets all his unique units and stuff display.
Yeah, I remember a while ago that someone had made, like, a script to modify the civilization selection screen so that you could see all your unique properties on it. I'm sure if that script still exists out there.
Yeah, because if you click, like, the Krogan, for example, you'll see in the screenshot of them, you can see all my unique units in the loading screens and the selection screen.
Hmm.
How I did that was I just, like, selected his Greek civ at the same time, because it seems to affect my ones as well. There must be some script that affects everything.
Huh. Well, I guess one thing that I was really impressed by with Potmalx, it looked like, at least from the display, that there were no special units for civilizations or no special buildings at all.
Oh, are you talking about Sengoku Jidai?
Yes.
What happened is when you're making civilizations and you don't have two unique units or buildings and on the select screen, it breaks. That's because they're faulty code. But what I did for Sengoku Jidai was I took the scenario UI from like Fall of Rome or the other scenarios that Firaxis had released, and I had taken their UI and kind of put it on for my mod. This is back when I was inexperienced with LUA, so it was really hard for me to, like, copy. I copied and pasted, and I had to change some things around, but I wasn't able to manipulate it. As of now, I could probably manipulate that a lot. I do some UI stuff for the trade screens and stuff for Civ 4 Diplomacy, but for that, in that script that they have for their scenarios, you're able to not have any units or stuff. It'll display fine.
Also, I don't know if it's still the case, but there's been a bug, I think with Steam or some variation of it, where if you do a scenario without the custom loader, it will not allow you to pick a civilization. You'll have to do random civilizations the first time through until you have to, like, reload the mod twice, which is a problem with my mods for a while.
That sounds kind of weird, that.
I remember I had that problem. I had, at first, solved it by replacing default civilizations, like, using their tags and stuff, but then putting new art assets and stuff in them and replace them. But then I figured using the custom screen would just be easier for everybody because it just, you don't have to replace everything. You can use your own new tags and stuff.
Makes sense.
I've noticed when looking through DLL that there's a lot of misconceptions within the Civ community about actually how the AI performs. And there seems to be a lot of false information going around that it's actually not true. Like, the AI is actually more complex than people realize, but the way it may appear when you're in game, it looks simpler. The Diplomacy AI in particular is very complicated. It's almost 22,000 lines of code, I believe, just straight up.
Wow.
The game often gets accused of cheating. I accused it of cheating myself many times in the past. And as a modder, you get in there and you realize, well, it doesn't cheat. I mean, it cheats in the sense that it gets bonuses and it gets special handicaps. Other than that, it does not cheat. It doesn't do anything. I used to swear that it would build a wonder that I couldn't possibly be beat to a wonder on, you know, like one turn left so many times without the AI cheating, you know. And, it's possible.
I was surprised, too, when I looked at it. I thought, you know, when the AI was making deals with other AI that they would fluff up the values to make it better for them. But nope, they follow the same logic with the human. With an AI, they do everything the same way. At the structure, I actually like it, and that's why I constantly defend them. If someone says the AI is bad, I say, no, they're not. Actually, I think they're really good.
You can see this through some mods as well. I think it's the Info Addict mod that shows you, like, the AI's trades. You can actually see that in-game.
Yeah. You know, the AI, of course, is, I guess you could say, the extreme example of automation. There's nothing that the AI does that you could clearly automate the player's experience if you wanted to. I mean, it would basically just be another AI player. But one of the things that interests me and one of the things that I've concentrated some of my modding efforts a little on is in trying to automate some of those processes, like trade routes and things, which is now going to, I don't know whether that's going to become more important or less important with Brave New World and the introduction of international trade routes. But the reason that the AI does well with these kind of things is they require a lot of micromanagement, like the diplomacy and the trading, and your casual player, I think, is not going to do that. You know, you're, of course, what we call your number crunchers or whatever we want to call them, the strategy players, hardcore strategy players, they'll do that.
Well, one thing I was wondering about the AI, judges your vulnerability, it seems based on very few things. Like, from my impression, it looks like it's just looking at your current gold and your current units, but I've heard it doesn't actually look at production or anything like that. Does that seem to be the case from what you've taken a look at? Like, you're efficiently weak, your allies will betray you and invade and all that?
Well, talk about betrayal. That's, first of all, based off of loyalty that every leader gets. They get that. That's like the base chance, and then it's modified. They do look at your target value, but they check a lot of things. They check your military strength. Mm-hmm. They check your economy. But I think in the game, economy only refers to your population and cities. I think that's a little flaw that they should look at. They also look at your distance. If you're distant from them, you're not as good as a target as them because it's going to take a while for their units to get there, or they're not going to attack at all.
If you're talking about just declaring war?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things they do consider for declaring war, too, I think, which is, have you ever broken a treaty with them? Have you ever bought land too close to them? Have you ever promised you wouldn't buy more land too close to them and then broken that promise? All of those things are all remembered, I think, aren't they?
It's all factored into their opinion of you. The opinion is the plus-minus modifiers you see when you look at the green and the red. The opinion would factor in, but I don't think they go through all those checks. Kind of be inefficient. There's a lot of checks to see, but they do look at your city strength, your military strength, your economic strength, and your distance when factoring in if you're a target or not. It's just specifically for calculating how much your target value is, but then they use that value to determine if they're going to go to war or betray you and stuff. So you can see it's all connected. And as you look at it, you can see kind of gets webbed. Everything kind of connects together for all different functions. But it works, in my opinion.
But you're correct. They don't consider production. There's been some debate as to whether they should or not. The debate being that if they consider production, then, you know, one of the things that war does is it slows down your production. So if the AI stops going to war with you because you have a very, very strong economy and you can produce units very quickly to fight back, you'll just keep chugging your economy along. So the war slows you down.
Also, about that, this I'm talking about, like, what the developers, when they're developing the AI, were thinking about was the human can't just go into the AI and look at their production. So if the AI can do that to the human, isn't that cheating? Because now they have extra information that the player doesn't have. And I think that was a big focus, was not to have the AI cheat, which does hurt their effectiveness, but makes the experience overall, I think, better.
I see that. I usually play a single D challenge, and so I've had the AI do very weird things when I'm playing style, like sending armies that I just crush again and again, like even on the higher difficulty levels.
The AI must have some knowledge of this. I guess because you have to trade it, you know, knowledge of how much gold you have, that's how they can justify that. But I have gotten messages before from the AI saying you've got a great economy going there and things like that.
Talking about the AI, it might be a good point to actually talk about your Civ 5 diplomacy mod.
You know, it's funny, when I first started that mod back in late April, I did one day of code, I got the share opinion button, like, in the game, and, like, it didn't work, but it was there. And so I posted on the Reddit, and I'm like, hey, just a feature I'm working on. And it was from Civ 4. I remember distinctly being able to ask AI Civs. They got good reception. I posted it. All of a sudden, I kind of got addicted to looking at the code and actually going through it. And then all of a sudden, before I know it, I'm doing world maps, and I'm doing text trading, and I'm doing... and this is ballooned into this massive project. And now I look at it, I blink the last 2 weeks. I've coded 3,000 lines of C++ for Vassalage. And it's working in-game. And I'm amazed just how much I've actually dedicated myself to this.
Yeah. Sometimes I look at mine and I just think, wow, I can't believe I've made it.
Yeah.
I'm actually a little depressed that in some ways that with the timing of, you know, we've got map trading and we've got all of these new features that you're adding in, and then we're going to have Brave New World.
Yeah.
I was depressed at that too, but then I realized that this gives me great time in that period after Brave New World comes out to A, play and experience Brave New World and enjoy it, and then be able to pour over to vanilla, which a lot of people want me to do. So I'm going to make a vanilla DLL in that time, and then when the source code comes out for Brave New World, I'm going to make the Brave New World version of it, and then I'm going to have all three versions that anyone can experience the mod as they like, and I'm going to have to do tweaks here and there, but overall I think it'll work together.
One thing I was worried about with the Vassalage thing, but I noticed that when I played through a game with your mod enabled, occasionally saves were not doing very well would just offer me stuff, just for, without even asking.
Yes, that is something I added in version 5 of Civ 4 Diplomacy. Like, civs that you have a declaration of friendship with will offer you gifts. The calculation that does that is based off of, do we have more gold than you? Do we have more gold per turn than you? Do we have more science than you? If we will, then we give you a tech. They can give you three things, gold, tech, or luxury. They'll check to see if your happiness is low, and if they have a luxury to give you, then they'll offer one up. I did that because I felt that people were complaining, oh, there's no reason to make a friend, so now I gave you a reason to make a friend.
That's pretty cool.
I guess you look out the tech sharing agreements. If you turn on tech trading, there's not as much incentive to make declarations of friends. Like in the base game, you know, you couldn't, a research agreement without having a declaration of friends.
The reason I disable research agreements with technology trading is because I felt like if you have both research agreements and tech trading, the speed at which you acquire techs would just be astronomical. You would blow through the tech tree. So I figured that for a balance reason, I would disable them. And I think it's easier to balance one thing separate. And that's why I gave you an option. If you want to use tech trading, you can. You don't have to, though, and I'm not going to force you to. And if you want to, but you're going to have to sacrifice research agreements. But I don't think that devalues friendships just because you can't sign research agreements. I think there's still a lot of value in having a friend, especially now they offer you stuff and then you can request from them without demanding them.
I think it helped a lot. Like, I figure, you know, you took a little bit away from being a friend, you had a little bit back, so it worked out. Doesn't mean that the friendship was useless before, but it still was a little bit less useful.
Well, I think also it's a stepping stone. I mean, if you're depending on what your game style is or what your game goals are, becoming friendlier with civilizations will allow you to have defensive packs, you know, which can be very, very useful, things like that.
Makes sense. One thing I was worried about, I noticed, I believe it was the Porcelain Tower, you made adjustments to that to give you a research boost. Did you also make adjustments to the various policies that had to do with tech trading?
Yes, the policy that adjusted research agreement cost,
right.
I had also changed that to decrease the deal value of a tech so you can buy techs cheaper from other AIs because you have that policy. And I did that with modding in mind so that if you actually mod that value, so I think it's set at 25 right now, if you mod that, you set 50, then tech trading is going to cost 50% less as well. It goes with that. When I design, I try to make sure that modders like me who want to go in and change stuff can to tweak some things to their liking. So yes, I did update anything that did for tech trading. I did update for that.
The things that you're adding, are you putting any hooks in there, if you will, for XML? I mean, you just mentioned one, but I mean, is that something you're doing commonly to allow people to create civilizations, for example, that could take advantage of some of this stuff?
Well, what I do is, for stuff that I add, I actually have to add for XML, because it just makes my life easier, and it makes it more moddable. So, like, for the sharing opinions, there's a value that you can set in the game speeds info, XML, that you can change how long you have to wait before they'll share opinion with you again, after they've declined it, based on the speed. For Vassalage, which I'm working on right now, I have an SQL file going, and there's a lot of defines, and there's a lot of things like minimum vassal turns and turns between vassals. All that stuff is done through XML. I try not to hard code anything into my mod. I want people to be able to switch easily, and it's also easier for me to change it.
Sure. I was thinking along the lines of, I'm just going to toss this out as an example, but not the only one that we could think of, I'm sure. Being able to have unique abilities or, you know, in a civilization, for example, with your vassalage, you could, you know, unique abilities such as can have vassals earlier than other civilizations or whatever. I'm not sure how you're going to set up vassals.
As of right now, vassals are enabled the same way anything else is enabled through text. Like map trading is enabled through navigation and it's done through a technologies table. But on request, I will be more than willing if a modder wants to say, hey, I want to use your feature, but I want to make this modification. Can you please help me out? Then I'll be like, yeah, okay, I'll write function an LUA hook or an XML thing and to help them out to get them to do that. I would have no problems doing that. In fact, I'm open to that. If you guys have suggestions, I have a suggestions right on my Steam Workshop page, and you can always message me. I will put them in.
That's quite cool.
One thing I was actually wondering, I guess, you mentioned the tying things to tech and the maps being tied to navigation. It sort of struck me that was a little late in the game. By the point I had navigation, I had already explored most of the map. I don't know if other people explored different rates.
Well, the logic behind that one was Well, within a tech, there's no paper. I think that's what gave you map trading in Civ 4. And navigation was around the time where everyone has caravels and can explore. And from what I've noticed, and every time I play and I get astronomy, I try to beeline straight for navigation to get those maps. I didn't think it was too late, because usually around the time I get it, AI Civs haven't explored yet. I can sell that map for a huge profit. I like the position on the tech tree navigation, but then again, as I said, it's a simple XML thing. Type equals tech navigation. You can go in there and you can change that very quickly into astronomy or compass, for example. Whatever you want, you can change it. I have no problems with that.
As you said, the AI is more complicated than people realize, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about was how you determined how to make a good trade, a trade that appeared would be one that maybe would have been offered had this feature been done by the Fair Access team themselves. I mean, so it, you know, it had to look right, it had to feel right. So to do that with the trading, to determine the values, how did you go about that?
Well, I like that, because I think that's a problem. You have to think about it from a game design perspective. Is I have to, as a programmer, decide what would be fair to the player. So for map trading, I figured I think I should go through each one of their tiles and actually assign a value to that tile, and then that's add them all up, and that's what you get for the map. It's actually difficult. I spent a lot of time going through and testing out different values. I actually have a log that I create, just like the other spreadsheets that Fair Access creates, all those logs. I look at them, and I'm just thinking to myself as I'm playing, is that fair? And after a while, you come up and you say, this seems fair for this amount of time. And the key is to get a consistent formula so that you can change it around and you can tweak it a little bit, but it would still to make a good value. Like for text, I think that was the hardest for me.
And you're basing it on concrete things, which I think is good.
What do you mean by that?
When they go to make a trade, we're not just pulling numbers out of the ether. You know, you consider concrete things when you consider the value of a tech. For example, a tech, how much more advanced, you know, is that the same? I'm not sure all the details that you check, but I know you check to see whether they're researching that tech already, right?
Well,
among other things.
Yeah, that is done through a nifty function that they have in the DLAI, which is possible to trade item. And that is where you define the rules of whether or not the actual technology is available for trade or the item you can actually trade it. So that's where I handle, do we have that tech? Do they not have that tech? And can they research that tech? And you have to be very specific what you have, otherwise you end up with the incorrect thing. And everything I do, is concrete. And I also want it to be moddable. So if somebody goes in and adds a technology, I want the AI to be able to value that technology correctly. And so you can't hard code things. So I do everything to be flexible.
With your older Japan mod, and apparently it requires the Korea DLC?
Yes.
I want to try it out, but I Korea DLC, I didn't have to get in it anyway, because I've been wanting to for a while, but it was sort of, I was surprised to see it required.
If that's the case, then I used the rocket artillery art in, as one of the units.
Yeah.
And so if you didn't have it, I think a spearman would show up. So I just made a
rocket. Chuck rockets. Did it actually fire rockets?
I don't know, because I just know that if an art define doesn't exist, then it just creates spearmint default. I never actually tried using them. Like,
you know,
like an archer.
Have you worked with others?
No, I've just been by myself. Every time I do a mod, I'm always doing it myself. I never worked with other people.
Do you not even, like, plan or throw ideas off people? Or you mentioned, like, we could give you ideas on your page.
Yeah, no, I always appreciate anyone offering me suggestions. Just because you offer a suggestion doesn't mean I implement it, but if I actually like what I see, then I made a post on Reddit today about, I'm changing the AI. I'm gonna add something in for the diplomacy AI where they actually look at their global situation and see how they're doing compared to other civs. I haven't seen a function to do that yet. So I asked, I'm like, when do you think you are in a good position so I can try to replicate that for a human? So yeah, I do ask for help at times, and usually a lot of stuff I do is just independent. And for tech,
it's very good work. It's I've been very impressed, and I've been following closely.
Thank you. I spent a lot of time on it.
Transfer over to talking about Scooby's mods.
Oh man, so where should I start, I wonder? I guess I could start, like, back when I started thinking about all this, and, like, I released the Asari, I think it was on the 20th of February, or sometime around the end of February, but the actual, like, planning for them began in October, I think it was, months before I actually put the Asari out. The idea, like, arrived.
Did you release them all at once, or did you release them one at a time? Because I notice right now there's just enough to play on a standard map and have only your Mass Effect Civilizations, which I did, which was cool. It made me actually want a total conversion mod for Mass Effect for Civ 5.
That's what I love to hear, actually. No, I've been coming out pretty much weekly since February, so they're not done yet. I think I've got think it's 4 left to go, 4 or 5 possibly. The week before Brave New World comes out, they should all be out.
Is that because you're just running out of civilizations within the mythology, or because that's where you plan on stopping?
No, I think that's them all done, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just luck that they're coming out the week before Brave New World is. Which is also kind of bad, because I wanted to stop and spend time to play with them for like a few months. Because I think I started them when Brave New World was still just a rumor. We knew of it, but we didn't know about it. And then I think it was like 3 weeks into making them, we heard about Brave New World.
I'll be interested to see what modifications, you know, what stuff gets picked up into Brave New World. That happens every time they do a release, you know, they incorporate some things that the modding community had done. They did do it their own way, and it's very interesting to see that. I'm curious to see what they do this time.
Yeah, yeah. I think mine's came out slightly too late for that, but...
What was it, like, Merchant Banker Civilization again? Was it the Volus?
Yeah.
I'm sure you can do something interesting with, like, trade routes with them.
Oh, yeah, completely. In the Asari, the first one I've hit, in the game, they're, like, the dominant power in the galaxy. So I'm thinking about something with World Congress with them.
Mm-hmm.
Something possibly to give them slight advantage, like, only, like, a tiny advantage on that. I've got so much ideas. Like, I'm looking at it, and I read all the Brave New World stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do something there and change this one here and et cetera, et cetera.
So you were a big fan of and played a lot of Mass Effect, I take it, before you got into Civilization?
I'm pretty sure that's, like, the only game, because we played the multiplayer constantly, and it was the only game we played. Now, not so much, because one of my friends has got a PC, so we tend to go into PC gaming now. But beforehand, it was just me and my friend Luke.
They had it on the PC.
Yeah, they have it on the PC too, but no one had a PC at the time. We've all got Xboxes. Like, I've got a really good PC now, but only one friend actually had a decent PC as well, so we just played Xbox.
I really like Krogan. Like, I know you're trying for, they have the fast growth and the attack bonus, but I really
Is that the woman, the queen?
No, that's the growth.
The desert bonus? Yeah, I like the queen, the desert bonus.
The Krogan are the big turtle people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What I really like with them is that I was able to use them in, like, a completely different way. Like, I guess they're intended for, like, overwhelming people and attacking.
Yeah.
But I was able to do cultural victory by just having, this hugest city. I was seeing it, like, as a Krogan India sort of victory.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get it as big as possible. Gave them, a breeding religion and, you know, all the tradition policies and whatnot. And it worked out great.
Yeah. The one thing we try to do is, like, make them so you're not, like, forced into playing them in one direction, if that makes sense. Like, you can kind of do other things with them. We want them to be, like, really unique. This is the direction that you kind of have to go in with these people, like a science victory or domination victory. But we didn't want to make it just that.
My modding has been, like I said, on the Lewis side and some on the DLL side, not so much in creating civilizations. One of the things I'm curious about, now, I know that you probably can, but what level of detail do you get into when you're doing modding in the XML for a civilization? Do you do things like what its grand plan is? Is this a warlike leader? You know, all those different kinds of things?
Oh, yeah, completely. I think it's one of the first things I do. I think I do how the leaders are going to act, and then the civs, the general civilization. But one of the first things that I put out is how this leader is going to act and what they're going to do. And you have to do it anyway for the XML, but that's the first thing I do. It's when I sit down, that's the first thing I pump out.
I usually take, like, the existing leader that I want them to act like and then make adjustments from there.
Mm-hmm.
I find that works easier for me.
I look over, like, all the other leaders and the vanilla ones and see how they work, why they do the things they do, basically. I generally got the hang of it, so I generally just start from scratch, almost, in a sense. I don't really use the other leaders for a reference. The vanilla leaders, I mean. I know how they'll act anyway, just by looking at the code.
Right.
Theory test them, mostly, and I just basically make sure they work. And I do adjust them and change them if they're not working as intended or if they're a bit too good or too bad in some areas. And I think that once they're all released, I'm definitely going to have, like, another complete balanced look at them.
Makes sense.
So if you have civilizations that have specific attributes that require you to set up a situation when you test, how do you go about doing that? Like, do you just do one civilization at a time? Like, say the civilization, like, it's a desert bonus. Do you just go ahead and do a sandstorm map and not worry about the other civilizations? And just, I mean, ideally, if I were to drop all of them on just a random map, on any random map, they would be fairly equally balanced. But obviously, some of them have specific advantages that need to be tested in specific conditions.
I do, like, a few variations, but it's, like, maybe, like, a normal match. Like, not, like, the single city or matches with certain things, like, you can't do this or you can't do that. Basically, you know, like, what I mean, like, a normal match and a varied amount of different land masses and land types. They're not going to excel in every map type, or they're not going to excel in every situation. As long as, in general, they work, that's all right. I look at. like you said, Queen, the Rachni, and how they get their bonuses with, I think it's desert and snow.
Yeah.
The way they're generally made, it's not supposed to be that they seek out those tiles. It's supposed to be that those tiles don't affect them negatively.
Right.
In a sense, if you look at it like that, they can go in the middle of the Antarctic if they wanted to. But it's supposed to be that those tiles don't negatively affect them.
Right.
So for them, I wouldn't even really need to test how well do they do in the sand or how well do they do it in the snow. I would test if their trait's working, basically. And then, like, test the balance on the movement and stuff like that.
So the snow is interesting because I hadn't really seen much done with snow before. And so I wanted to try that. I wanted to say, well, I'm going to, you know, play a civilization and start on snow tiles if I can.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It took a little bit of work to actually get it to put me near snow. But I got it to do that, and it's interesting because there's snow, but there's also ice, and ice is completely unusable. And they seem to go together, so you get some unusable tiles if you try to go for a snow start, usually, unfortunately. But it's still cool. It's cool to just be able to do that. I'd never done that before.
That's kind of like the whole reason why I made it, like, even though you did seek out those snow tiles, which is fine, and I love hearing people's stories in them, I generally made them with the idea that you basically can't get a bad start with them, in a sense. Compared to the vanilla sieves, I noticed quite early on, when we started planning them, me and Luke that planned it, it was with the idea of, we need to make them unique, we need to make them work, like not make them something completely ridiculous, and make it so that they're kind of balanced with the vanilla sieves. And then really quickly, I noticed that doing all of those was near impossible. Like if we wanted to make them the way we wanted to make them.
I like the fact that you have enough to play on a standard map, but only your civilizations, because they're balanced against each other much better.
And when they come out, there'll be 17 of them. Not including the Reapers.
Yeah.
And they should, like, that's pretty much a full match. But together, they'll be fine. That's why I always say they work better together. I think every single one, at some point, has had somebody saying it's overpowered. Which I actually find kind of funny, because if you look at them together...
I thought it was pretty clear that they were meant to be played together.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things, I was looking through your XML. I love the names you use for a lot of things. The building food court for the Krogan aqueduct replacement, and then building war book for the library replacement.
Yeah. Stuff like that happens. Sometimes that's kind of like a placeholder name. I think for the Geth, you can check out their quantum processor is called like a Geth processor. That was just a last minute change. I was like, Geth processor? That doesn't sound too right. And that was just kind of like, I basically always make the XML so that I can understand it if I look at it. And I also structure my XML so that if somebody wanted to make a mod or get into civilization mods, they could use my ones as a reference.
There's one thing I did notice about it. There was a problem that came up with the Krogan. It wasn't actually a problem with your code, it was a problem with theirs. Have you taken a look at the policy trees at all? The policy trees have some interesting stuff. One of the interesting things that I was looking through the tradition tree, and the tradition closer has this thing where, what was the exact code? So like, number of cities free filled food building, and they put in 4, because when you finish your mission, 4 aqueducts. It looks like that's actually hard-coded somehow with the aqueducts.
Yeah, but the looks of it, I think I checked that one out, and I think it was actually called a wind trap or something in the city. When I checked it out, I had a building in my city that was called a wind trap, and I was like, what's this? And I looked everywhere to see if I could find information on it, but I just couldn't.
So I was doing like tradition with Krogan and actually end up perhaps, you know, making things too good.
Yeah.
Because when I finished tradition, it gave me an aqueduct. And then I think the Krogan food court, you know, in addition to that.
Yeah, that's why I think that aqueduct in my game, can't remember how, but I think that was the one that was called the wind trap.
I wonder if you might be able to fix that with doing updates of the aqueduct, because it could be like the code's hard calling aqueduct, and you just never mess up the other civilizations. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think I might be able to do like a Lua hook on that in some way. It's not like real aqueducts, I've noticed.
I got a real aqueduct and I did it.
Yeah, but I think like in the actual code, it's not a real aqueduct. But in the game, it looks like an aqueduct. But I don't think in reality it is, because the Krogan, they've got Lua hooks that replace, like if they capture another civilization's city, they don't get their libraries, because if they got their libraries, then it would...
Right.
They would get such a science boost, it's unbelievable, because their population growth, it would kind of, like, you know, negate their science penalty.
The research lab, I think it is, that you basically give the same thing as a library later game.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason why that kind of stayed in is because their science is so reduced, they'll be behind everyone by quite a bit. And they're weak. They're supposed to be, like, really good in the early game and then just weak. They've got amazing growth and they've still got all their bonuses, but because they're behind in tech, their bonus, their combat bonus won't really help them. They can be taken over if you're aggressive against them. But then it was supposed to be that I didn't want them just to be good in the early game and then crap through it. So basically, if you let them get to the stage that they get research labs and the late game, then you're kind of punished for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would just be really good at start and then crap.
With the tradition build, like, I found them really strong early game and then really strong late game, like, even before the research lab.
The Krogan are so complex. What I have to work with on them in the actual main games, like in the actual Mass Effect universe, they're just broken.
Right.
Well, 100%.
One of the problems is that population and science are related.
Yeah. Why they don't have a library and can't capture libraries and why their whole science is taken down. Like, even with the population growth, they're still 3%, but then, like, population kind of mitigates it. But then they've also got the libraries, which also reduces that. So I don't know the exact calculations, but it's technically slightly higher than 33%.
Okay.
But it's still much lower than all the rest. And in the Mass Effect universe, the Turians and the Salarians, I think like hundreds of years before the games, before humans found them, did the thing called the Genophage that makes it so that one in every 1,000 kids is a stillborn. Because the Krogan's population was just like so dramatic. They can like lay like 1,000 eggs a year or something like that. So in the Mass Effect universe, by the time the first game rolls around, they're pretty much a dying race because of the Genophage.
Or are you thinking about doing some total conversion or scenario with these in the end?
I've been thinking a bit, but right now what I'm mainly thinking about, getting them out, and then once they're out, it's like a week, and Brave New World's going to come out. So what I'm thinking about then is I'm going to take a break and play Brave New World. And then I'm going to think about replan them, and I'm releasing separate versions, but all in one this time, rather than one at a time, like weekly. I'm just going to put them all out at the same time. Because I was such a fan of Mass Effect, but right now I'm at work and I'm thinking about, oh, maybe I can do this for one of my future races, and oh, maybe I can balance them by doing this. And I just constantly think about Mass Effect right now. It's like an obsession. Like, I feel like I'm Trekkie, like, or, you know. These mods are basically making me become obsessed with it. So I definitely want to take a break from Mass Effect. There was two of us on this project when it started, technically. And I do say that in the description, but it's basically just me that does it now. My friend Luke, he's helped a lot with the planning, and I still throw it to him, and it was always meant to be like a shared project. I didn't make all the races, but I pretty much made them all, and it's just kind of gotten to the stage now that it's my project. He never had the passion. All the coding completely is to me. The best thing, I think, is if people ask me a question or if they say something, and then I describe the planning process behind it. Like, I think in my mods now, I do like a developer commentary, I guess is what you could call it. Like, in my descriptions of my mods, I explain, like, the design behind them. Oh, this is the reason why we did this, and that's the reason why this is here. I love it if people ask me a question, and then I explain it to them the way I thought of it, and then they go, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Tomatek, I think is his name, is how you pronounce it.
Tomatek,
yeah, so, yeah. Something, I'm just terrible with pronunciations.
I don't know how it's spelled either.
No. He has helped me like so much when I first started it. The thing about Civ 5 Modern is you pretty much go into it blind. You have Kale's Modern Guide, but it's so big it can be almost off-putting for people. It's huge, isn't it? Like 85 pages or something.
It's also out of date now.
And out of date, yeah.
Documentation is, as has been mentioned, is, how should I say, crowdsourced.
Yeah.
It's just made it difficult.
Framed architecture, I don't know if you've checked out any of his mods. He did the Faroon scenario.
Yeah.
He helped me with the user interface. So it definitely helps to have someone who is more experienced help you avoid like all the stupid errors that everybody makes. Like tell you that your civilizations need to have spies or it's going to crash. Stuff like that.
Yeah. I've run so much friend requests. I used to kind of ignore them near the start, I think for like the first week or two. But now I just accept them. If people add me as friends, I do accept them. Because I noticed that a lot of people that add me are asking about mods, like trying to get into the modding community. And because I think the first time I accepted a friend's request, it was just like, oh man, hey, I love your mods. I was like, oh, cheers. And then that was it. But now I know I've helped at least four other collections. Wow. I think it's the Doctor Who one, the Lord of the Rings one, and another one, the Halo one. They've just directly told me that it was my collection that inspired them to do this.
Oh, wow.
I always want to be like, if somebody needs any help, just ask me. I do explain to them that I can't really make it for them, if that makes sense. Occasionally some people that want you to like basically make it for them, but I do guide. And I do like read people's error logs. The amount of times I've read people's error logs and told them, this, that, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like the modding community needs to feel more like a community.
it's difficult. I think people get into this because they have a specific interest.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an extension of their playtime, of their time away from work. And so finding two people whose interests match up, you know, let alone a bunch of people, and getting to work together on something like this, I found to be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I think Civ 5 modding has suffered perception that it's not as moddable as people thought it was going to be when it came out. So there's a perception that it's harder than Civ 4, so that people who are modding in Civ 4 don't make the transfer over to Civ 5, and so we've suffered in terms of the amount of people who are trying to mod. Because if you notice, with Civ 4, there was a lot of big mods and a lot of people working together, and then for Civ 5, it's usually one person works on their own project, we're all working on separate projects, and we do provide help to each other, but we're not like a centralized community.
Well, I've mainly been working, you know, with one artist. Like, I actually also met through Reddit. He was also, you know, into the whole, like, Eternal War thing for Civ 2 thing for a while. Been helped by Frame, but I haven't really, you know, collaborated with anybody outside of that.
I actually have. I've got two artists, in a sense. Well, I've got one now. My first artist, who's done, like, most of the symbols for all the races, I found him, actually, through DeviantArt, and he'd already made a lot of them just as a project of his. So then I asked him, like, for permission. I was like, oh, could I use some of these symbols? Because I'm terrible with art. I can't draw to save my life. And he was like, yeah, sure. And then I asked him, I think I requested, actually, if he could make a few more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, just the ones that he hadn't made, and like the ones I had planned. And then he, like, literally, he just, like, went, yeah, sure, and just made them instantly, almost all of them. And I was like, oh, wow, thanks. But then he's just disappeared. I've tried contacting him since then, but he's gone.
Ayakara, I think it was?
Yeah, Ayakara, or Ayakara, whatever your pronunciation, but...
yeah.
She's made the Krogan, the Rachni, and the Collectors, and she's making the Drell as well. I actually put them in the screenshots because her symbols are just fantastic. I think she'd already made the Krogan, but it wasn't for the Krogan. It was she'd already made that symbol, that picture beforehand. So I asked her for that, and then she went, yeah. And then after a while, once my civs, sometimes call them races, being released, and I realized that I still didn't have ones for the Rachni or the Collector or the Drell, and my artist wasn't responding. I approached her and I asked her, oh, I was wondering if you could make some for me. She's like a professional artist, and she even works with a company by the sounds of it, because she mentioned that normally this would, like, you know, cost money. But she said she'll do this as like a project. She said, in like such a big hand, like she's so helpful.
Yeah, I spent some time working with Oscar. Oscar actually does, I think, 3D art professionally, but he's wanting to expand into 3D art.
Yeah.
So he's been using the various mods, basically practice, I guess, getting work out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one of his paintings that he did that I really liked and asked if I could use it. Then he was like, oh, yeah, I can make more, too.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about, I was actually taking a look at your Pantsonair again, the map you did, and I was actually pretty impressed. Like, do you have any advice for putting a map down in the Hexen?
There was an old scenario, some guy, I forget his name, he made like a Fall of Rome scenario, and he had made a post detailing how he transferred from a map onto a world builder thing. I usually just import a map image into like a GIMP image editor, and then I use that to create a grid, and then I actually take ice tiles, and I go into World Builder, and I kind of do it mathematically so I know, like, how big, how many hexes one grid block is, and I just put ice hexes in a grid. Mm. And then I look at the image for each grid block. I do it individually. I try to shape what's inside the ice blocks into the actual grid on the map. So it's like cutting it into pieces. If you do it all at once, you're going to have inaccuracies. But if you do it, like, separated, then you're going to have a much easier time with it.
I guess one thing I did was obviously, you know, use GIMP. I put the map on GIMP, and then I put like a expert over it, and then basically just one by one sort of like copy over it.
That's another way to do it. There's a whole lot of ways you can do it.
But it's not an easy thing to do. So.
No, it's actually, I think, the most annoying thing about map creation, trying to get it into a hex grid. It's really, really tough.
But I like the hex grid as a player.
Oh, yeah, no, the hex grid as a player is great.
It also looks better just... Instead of having, like, blocky coasts, you have natural
coasts. You know, they didn't look bad until now. You know, when I was playing Civ 4, it was like, I didn't think, oh, wow, everything's, you know, blocky and square, and because I didn't know better, I guess.
Yeah. You go back and play an old game, and you're like, wow, this is look at this.
Well, I don't have to go back to unit stacking again. I prefer the new 1-unit per tile so much better.
You know, what's funny about that is this is one of the reasons why... I decided to do, like, a Civ 4 diplomacy thing, because I love the diplomacy in that game. I love the 1 unit per tile in combat in this game. Why not just merge them and get the best game? And now that I'm playing with vassals, it's like I'm playing Warlords again, and it's a ton of fun. I can't wait to release it to everyone, as I think they're going to love it. This is one of the best things, to be able to actually play your creation and actually have fun with it. It's a great feeling.
And positive feedback as well. It's like such a help.
Yeah.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast or sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. You can do some strange stuff. One of the funniest mods ever, I think W. Howard wrote a small little mod that actually you can do it, I think, in XML, 100% sure, but you can change it so that instead of fallout from a nuclear explosion, you get trees. So you can drop forests on people.
I could see it for, like, you know, fantasy mods, like a druid attack or something.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Iroquois would be happy.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys ever played, like, Alpha Centauri at all.
No.
Oh, okay.
You mean the Alpha Centauri that is Civilization game, basically. Set in space, yes.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
But one of the things that they did is really neat in that one, which I think would be neat to see in a mod as well. In many ways, the planet itself is your enemy. Basically, instead of barbarians, they had these mind worms that come out from the vegetation and attack your civilization, kill people, and it was pretty horrible. But if you polluted the planet too much, more and more mind worms would show up trying to destroy you. And so with pollution, the threat wasn't necessarily environmental damage, but the environment trying to murder you, which I thought was a great thing to see. And then they had, like, a plot line involved with it and everything. It would be neat to see something like that, I think, you know, with the mod. And that could definitely work with the forced nuke.
Very cool.
If someone wanted to get into programming, a young person, anybody really, but Civ offers a pretty good opportunity for that because it has really all three tiers. You know, the XML, which is kind of an entry level. You don't really need to know much about programming at all.
Yeah.
And then Lua, which is, you know, a 4GL language, so it's much looser, much easier for people to learn and use in theory. And then, well, might not agree with that, but, and then the next layer of that is the DLL, which is, of course, the C++ source code, which gives you a lot of power, but at the cost of difficulty. People can really get a good cross-section of skills. Even the SQL Lite stuff will give you some basic SQL skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've actually found SQL to be so much easier than XML. And I started porting everything over to SQL because it's so much easier to just manage everything, all the database and stuff.
I don't know. I found the XML easier. I guess what I really like doing, I don't know if you guys have done this at all, just like opening up all the XML files, just reading through them, and you're just like, oh, that's how they did that civilization, or that's how they did that, you know, special ability and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, I do that. Like, sometimes if somebody makes a mod and I look at it and I'm like, wow, I wonder how they did that. I'll, like, go check out their XML and see how it works. And that's why I said about my XML, why I always try to make it so you can find this out, so it's easy to navigate.
Right.
So if you wanted to be like, oh, wow, how did he make the trade routes with the Geth or the Rachni? You just open up my XML and there you go.
There's some extremely helpful people.
You want to give a shout-out to William Howard again, and I guess also Kale, then.
Kale, yeah.
Felicus, is that how you pronounce it? He hasn't been on recently. I guess he's been taking a break, but he does a lot of helping out, and he's the guy that does the unofficial patch.
All right. Well, any final notes? Anything else before we head out?
No.
That was good meeting you all. Excellent conversation.
Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was episode 47 of the podcast.
I can actually quickly double-check that for you. I can.
You're right in the middle of that code now, huh?
Yeah, I just opened it up. I'll check for you.
There's so many people in the world. I mean, all you got to do is some internet searches, and you can find things you don't want to find. That would be a good segue into Code Corner, right?
Yeah, that's what I was tempting, yes.
And he's the guy that does the official patch. Well,
okay.
Charges.
Unofficial patch.
Unofficial patch, yeah. Sorry. Unofficial patch. There is.
When you were talking about the AI, like the way they act, I was wanting to mention Montezuma. I was just going to say, yeah, and then sometimes the AI are just dicks.
Yeah. Record date.
June 2nd, 2013.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication @civcom.net.